welcome to another Global Liberty Alliance podcast. This is your host, Jason Poblet, coming to you from the space coast of the free state of Florida. We're not coming to you anymore from Alexandria, Virginia, the home of the Global Liberty Alliance, although we still have our global headquarters there. I'm working from this outpost for the foreseeable future. And today we have with us a truly remarkable patriot, an American, a reminder of the importance of servant leaders, Rocky Sickman. He's a Marine sergeant involved with a phenomenal organization called Folds of Honor. And we're going to talk a lot about that toward the end of the podcast. But right now, I want to hone in on a chapter, a tough chapter of his life. For those of you who follow GLA and some of the work we do a lot of work with Americans and U.S. nationals unjustly detained or held hostage in foreign countries. And Rocky is a really important reminder about how this issue has been with us for a while, but also involving some current events. And I think what happened to him and 60 plus Americans for 444 days is something that everyone should study, especially folks who do not understand the Middle East and what's happening now, especially in Israel with Hamas. So we're going to get into a lot. We may not have a lot of time here to go over everything, but Rocky, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you, sir, for your service.
No, Jason, thank you for having me on the air, and look forward to the interview.
Well, let's start with the very beginning before we talk. By the way, and thanks for, I know you did a show recently with our folks here at the Space Coast, and we appreciate the time you've given Brevard County and your insights here that you're now doing a second run with us out here. That's phenomenal. Tell folks who don't know much about your path to service, those of us who are familiar with the hostage incident, we know what how you ended up there. But before you became a Marine, what drove you to public service? I know your dad and your brother, I think, were Vietnam veterans. You came from a small town, but give us that context. What motivated you to dedicate yourself to service?
Yes, sir. Yeah, and you're right, Jason. My parents, we came from a very small town, Krakow, Missouri. Population, I always say 50. There's a little more than that. But my parents taught me three things, Jason. Love of family, love of faith, and love of country. And little did I realize those three things would keep me alive. And I still use those things to this day. But growing up in that small town, we had another larger town, Washington, Missouri, where I played baseball, football, but whenever there was a parade, July 4th, my parents always had us in the parade, carrying the flag, and just, through that, I got to raise the flag at the St. Gertrude Elementary School, high school. I got to raise that flag, and very patriotic family. My father, he served in World War II in the Army. My brother served during Vietnam. In the Army. And so I just, seeing my family grow up and growing up in that small town, it was just something that, was always there. And I wasn't the smartest tool in the shed when I was in high school. I was always after sports and girls. And but I knew that there was more outside this small little town of Krakow, Missouri, Washington, Missouri. And so instead of going to college, my coach was looking for a small school for me to go and play football. But I probably would have dropped out because I just didn't have my head on straight. And so, I just saw this picture of a Marine one day as I was sitting at home reading and had a picture of a Marine in front of an American embassy, see the world, join the Marines. And I went over to the recruiter that day and joined the Marine Corps and came home that night. And it was part of the thing that growing up, it was my parents and there were five siblings, my older brother, my two older sisters, myself, my little brother. And my father would always go around the kitchen table at night and say, "What did you do today?" Well, he came to me and said, "What did you do today, Rocky?" I said, "Well, I joined the Marine Corps." And so I did a delay entry program. I was a junior, and I had signed up for an advance next year to go in. And my dad kind of giggled, and he told my mother, "Tony, tell Rocky to tell us what he did today." I said, no, Mom, I joined the Marine Corps. My dad looked at me and he was like somewhat shocked. And so sure enough, graduated and went into the Marine Corps. And I'd never seen my father cry before. And it was one of those things that morning that the recruiter came and picked us up in small town. I remember leaving. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. My dad just looked at me and he said, son, I sure hope you know what you're doing. I said, no, Dad, I just came out of football. I'm in shape. I know what I'm doing. And little did I realize, sure enough, I got to boot camp in San Diego, California, MCRD. And the next 13 weeks, every night I heard that airplane leave and I just prayed each night that I could not wait until I got on that airplane to get out of here. But, you know, it was one of those trainings, Jason, that, you know, they taught you how to clean your clothes with a bar of soap. And little did I realize that's what I would have to do, being held hostage. But they just, they instilled this character and this discipline in you. And so sure enough, I graduated from MCRD, went to Asia, went to Europe, came back, and I eventually wanted to be MCRD. I wanted to see the world first, and the world I saw. And then, but right before I did this gig with MSG, I met this young lady, and we were dating. And obviously, long story short, 42 years later, here we are, still married. And but awesome. She was 18, I was 22 when everything hit the fan November 4th, 1979.
Well, I thought Elam and I had a rough first year, 2 years of marriage, because we were very involved. My wife and I were involved in a lot of political work early on, and it was an unusual first 2 years because we were traveling a lot and being you know, both political people. We thought, right. Wow, this is pretty intense, but this takes the cake, my friend.
Well, you know, it was one of those difficult things because I had just talked to her on November 3rd. That day, we had put all non-essential people in a safe house up north of Iran. And, you know, to back up, and I don't know how much of your listeners remember why and what was going on in Iran. You know, the Shah had fled the country in January of 1979, and the new Islamic Republic of Iran came into power. And they, of course, heard that the Shah of Iran was going to be allowed into the United States for medical treatment. And so sure enough, 2 weeks prior to November 4th, there were demonstrations every day. But the host government, the Islamic Republic of Iran, came and provided security. And of course, every American embassy, Jason, around the world has that government security at the embassy. And the day before, there was a huge demonstration. There were probably over 200,000 people at surrounding the American embassy. And you could hear the chants of these people chanting death to America. And I'm a true believer, Jason. A Muslim is not born with hatred. They are taught hatred. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, but the Islamic Republic of Iran has taught their children to hate the great Satan, the United States of America, for 44 years. So that teaching, that hatred has just gone on. And you see these young kids that are all over the news and in Gaza and Palestine that are just, you know, taking hostages and killing people. It's very, very sad. And so
let me ask you a question before we jump into that particular chapter, which was a tough one. As far as, I'm just curious about one thing. Your dad, how did your dad react to you joining the Marines? I'm just curious, being an Army family, he was just proud that you're serving. He didn't care if you were serving, or was there a conversation there? I'm just curious.
Yeah, he was obviously, because he had heard that, you know, and knew that the Marines were much more disciplined, much more and in regards to other branches. Yeah. And so he was very proud, of course. And awesome. And as my mother, I mean, Jason, they came out for my graduation. And it's just awesome. It's so interesting how you take these young men and women into boot camp, and they come out a complete, I mean, I thought I was in shape, but little did I realize that they put me in and they broke every muscle down on my body and rebuilt me.
That's awesome.
The day of graduation, my parents walked right past me. They did not even recognize me. It wasn't that I changed that much, although I think I did, but it was just everybody looked the same. But when you came in boot camp, everybody had, you know, long hair, wearing different clothes. And then boot camp came. Here you were, just everybody was lean and mean. And my parents walked right past me and they heard me say, "Mom, Dad," and they both turned around and couldn't believe, you know.
That's awesome.
So they were very proud.
So you you saw a lot of the world, right, when you were in the Marine Corps? So this is
Yes, sir. Yeah, I spent a year in Asia. I was with 3-4 over there in Okinawa. Came back, went to Camp Geiger, where I was with 2-8, went to Europe for about a year, and then spent additional time there, and then eventually wanted to get into MSG, and that's when I signed up.
So for those younger folks who listen, and we have a lot of younger listeners, it's you still recommend it, right? I think
the Marine Corps?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? The Marine Corps, it's a camaraderie. As every branch of the military probably has that camaraderie, but the Marine Corps, I mean, it's just once a Marine, always a Marine. And I think the Marine Corps is the only branch of service that anybody that serves knows when the birthday is. You ask, when's the Air Force birthday? Well, I don't know. When's the Army birthday? Well, I don't know. When's the Coast Guard birthday? I don't know. But the Marine Corps always knows it's November 10th.
November 10th.
And, you know, the Marine Corps was founded in a Tun Tavern. And isn't it interesting? I went to work for, you know, one of the major breweries, Anheuser-Busch, when I came back. And so it's one of those things that a great, great organization. I still speak to American embassies around the world to this day. It is something. I've got pictures here. You still buy that, you know, those items. But no, I was very proud to be able to serve in the United States Marine Corps.
So since we mentioned the Marines' birthday, which is November 10th, folks, 1775, in case you're wondering, something else happened November, about a few days before that, back in 1979. You were right in the middle of it. We're not going to go over all the history, folks, of the Iran hostage crisis, but I think you should read it. We're going to provide some links there. But what I find fascinating about your story is how the things that you saw and how it was building up. Share with folks something that seems to have struck you in some of the interviews I've listened to and read that you've given about the role of women in that siege of our embassy in Tehran. And then maybe give folks some context about the things that they would do to you during those 444 days.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. 444 days, it's, you know, your listeners out there that are listening, you know, they've all probably have gone through a difficult time in your life. My difficult time was 444 days. It was each day was like a major traumatic situation. But, you know, the morning of November 4th, 1979, I had just gotten off duty. I was an 11 to 7 guy. Went over, and the Marine House was on the backside of the Marine Corps, or excuse me, the American Embassy, which was a 23-acre compound, which is pretty big.
Wow, that's big. Yeah.
And the Pisa building was on the very backside. I just came over, had breakfast with three of the individuals that, if you've ever seen the movie Argo, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
The three of those individuals I'm having breakfast with. And here we are talking about how we're all excited. The Marine Corps birthday was coming up, and we were going to be inviting all these different dignitaries from other embassies over for the big party. And little did we realize that 4 hours later, our life would be turned upside down and never the same. They went over to the Visa building, which was on the back side of the American Embassy. I walked down to the Chancery, which is the main embassy building on the compound. Went in, Billy Gallegos was on duty, and I said, "Hey, I got to go run in town and do some things, and I'll be back and we can have lunch." So I go and walk down, and you can hear the demonstrations. There, like I said, there have been demonstrations, you know, for the prior 2 weeks. And it was interesting. It's documented also, Jason, that, you know, the president at the time, President Carter, he's approached in a meeting and saying, "President Carter, we need to bring the Shah of Iran in." And it is documented that President Carter in this meeting says, "All right, we're going to bring the Shah in. What are you going to say when the Islamic Republic of Iran takes our people hostage? What are you going to say? Little did he realize that 2 weeks after he said it, that's exactly what happened. I'm walking into the motor pool gate right in front of the main gate that you saw the movie Argo.
All right.
And all of a sudden, my walkie-talkie had recall. And I turned around. There's a camera right over my head facing the front gate. And Jason, I will never forget, and I will tell every American as long as I live, that morning, November 4th, there was no security. There was no one outside that gate to hold those individuals back. Wow. And so you just saw them come over the wall. I took off to the chancery. Billy's already getting ready to close the four-inch steel doors. He saw me run up there. I squeezed in, and we closed the door. We get our weapons, which in 1979 consisted of a pistol, the 38 Semno State Department issued pistol, and a sawed-off shotgun were our weapons. And I'm happy to tell you that seven Marines held that chancery for the next 4 hours, waiting for the host government. The day of November 4th, 1979, when the Islamic Republic of Iran took the Americans hostages, they became terrorists. Mm. Now, these were diplomats. It was against, it's an international crime.
That's right.
And they got away with it, Jason. So, you know, you sit there and you look at 44 years later, all the stuff that Iran's doing, why wouldn't they do it? Because no one's ever held them accountable. And that morning, November 4th, here I am at the front door. They're pounding on the door. And, you know, you're loading your shotgun, you're loading your pistol, and your adrenaline's pumping, and you're dropping some rounds, and you know, take a deep breath, put the round back into the chamber, close your pistol, put some shells into the shotgun, and the plaster's coming from the door frame of as they're pounding on this door. Billy's downstairs. I radioed, and three Marines came standing. Two of us were kneeling, two were standing, you know, pointing right at the front door of the chancery, waiting for this thing to pop open. And little did I realize it would never have came open unless it was blown open. All of a sudden, we hear Billy downstairs. They've gotten in. And so I run downstairs. I'm the closest there. And as I'm running downstairs in boot camp, again, you know, they teach you all these different things. You wonder why are they teaching you over and over and over. Well, little did you realize as you're running down there, you're doing these things because you're prepared on what they taught you. And all of a sudden, I get downstairs, and Billy's to my right, and I'm to the left, and he points down the corridor, and there's a bellow of smoke coming from one of the offices that they had broken in. And who comes around the corner but four Iranian women in black chadors, and the Iranian men are behind them. And wow. They knew the mindset, Jason, just as what's happening in Gaza. They put missile launchers right near a hospital because they figured if they're going to blow the missile launcher, they're going to hit the hospital, and then they're going to blame it on everybody that, look, they killed. Sad thing about it is it backfired. It looks like, to my understanding, is one of their missiles backfired and blew up that hospital. But that morning of November 4th, the second thing I will never forget, and I will tell every American, they used Iranian women. And of course, we're being screamed, don't fire, don't retaliate, help is on the way. And I'm 22 years of age, I have my finger on that trigger, and I'm sitting there and I'm doing what I was told to do, is stand back. You're there just as a token. And I'm backing up, both of us back up to the steps. Tear gas is broken. They basically flee the building. And, you know, I regret looking back 44 years later, Jason, you wonder what would have happened had we pulled the trigger and shot. The Iranians, the men would have taken those women, and I guarantee you, they would have paraded them out in front of the streets and said, look what the Marines did. They killed unarmed, innocent women. But those people would have never seen that they put them up front first. I mean, but obviously, you know, General Mattis said, Rocky, you did what you were told to. I said, yes, sir. But I just wonder what would have happened that day. He said, well, you could have started, World War III. At least we would have done something then. And then little did I realize, how many days I would have to spend. But backing up to that story, we get up to the post one. We destroy all the stuff. We go up to the very top of the embassy. We're stalling for 4 hours, Jason, waiting for the host government to come. And we now have blockaded the door that we just came into, the most secure part of the American embassy, another four-inch steel door. And so what they started to do then is they started to bring people that couldn't make it into the embassy. Once we closed that door, nobody could get in, nobody could get out. So many Americans couldn't get there fast enough, and they were immediately taken. So the Islamic Republic of Iran basically brought these people on the other side of the door and start putting weapons to their heads, saying, they got a gun in my head. If you don't open the door, they're going to kill me. Well, one of our high-ranking officials were on the phone with President Carter at the time, and he said, hey, it's going to be 18 hours before we can get to you. But give yourself up and we'll get this resolved with diplomacy. So that was November 4th, 1979. We removed everything from the door. We opened the door. The Marines were the first ones out. We were immediately that day of November 4th, 1979. That's where 66 Americans were stripped their freedom, their dignity, and their pride, known as the Iran hostage crisis. That first 30 days, we were tied. Not only to speak, unless it was our interrogations. And, you would sit in the corner of a room. One week I was tied in bed with a Air Force captain, Neil Robinson. He was at the foot of the bed. I was at the head of the bed. And one night, all of a sudden, as we're sleeping in this bed on my back, and for some reason, I can't even sleep now on my back. I don't know if it's because of that or what, but wow. He would smell my feet. I would smell his feet. And one night, all of a sudden, they untied. I woke up. They were untying my wrist from his ankles, and they tied my wrist back up. They untied my ankles from his wrist, and they tied my ankles back up. He gets up and walks around the left side of the bed and walks around and looks down at me. And I just had this feeling, Jason. I said, say hello to my family. And he winks at me. And little did I realize that, yeah, they released all the blacks except for one and all the women except for two. Wow. But we had no idea. We had no idea how many people were there until 444 days later.
So let me ask you another question here. What happened? Because you've talked a lot about this as well. April 24, 1980, because this ties into somewhat with the work you're doing now with Folds of Honor.
Yes.
And Operation Eagle Claw. Tell folks what Operation Eagle, you're being treated horribly by the Iranians, folks. And remember, I'm not going to ask Rocky to recount all of that because it's tough, even though I know he's going to say, no, I could. This is not stuff you want to keep rehashing over and over again. And I've learned that over the years with some of our clients and people that we've brought through this process. But these men were treated horribly. The psychological torture they endured, the physical tortures they endured. It's something that I think Iran has not been held to account for what they did. And we still should hold them to account. I think America needs a hostage policy that has accountability baked into it. And Iran, I hope someday, we'll have to pay a price for that. But Carter, to his credit, tried to do something. And I'd like you to share with listeners what happened and how it ties into some of the work you're doing today.
Yeah, well, obviously, we were taken. And like I said, the first 30 days, they were tough. It was probably my most difficult because you had no one to speak to other than your inside your head. And the only thing that you could do was go back to wonderful times. And thinking, and obviously thinking back that 1975, the Vietnam War had ended, Jason, and all the Vietnam veterans had came home and people were spitting on these people that went and served their country because they were told to go serve and nobody treated them well. And now here you are tied to a chair through the broken windows of the embassy compound that we were being held in the offices. You could hear these young children, like I said, a Muslim is not born with hatred, they're taught hatred. And here they were starting to teach these young children chanting death to America. And you're sitting there thinking, if nobody remembered and cared about the Vietnam veterans, who cares about us? And it could be day five, day 10, day 20. Eventually spent my first Thanksgiving, my first Christmas in this area. I thought, I'm never getting out. Spent my first New Year's Eve, and then January, they put us into a room. I was in a room with Billy Gallegos and Jerry Plotkin. For the 400 days, out of 444 days, we went outside 7 times out of 444 days. I mean, tied to a chair for 30 plus days was bad, but being locked in a room 40 some days, go to the restroom, you had a knock on the door. If you knock too loud, they tell you you have to wait. But just, you know, your confinement, until your freedom has been stripped from you, do you realize how wonderful you have it? And sure enough, April 24th, little did we realize that the United States basically attempted the most daring rescue attempt in history. And to this day, CENTCOM, SOCOM is all created because of this rescue operation, Jason. Mm-hmm. It was these guys, two C-130s through from Cairo, Egypt, 8 helicopters started off the USS Nimitz, and they met in the middle of the desert. And I always tell people, I said, think about if we were to have taken an embassy in Washington, D.C., one of the national embassies, and we take their people hostage, and their country is going to come over and try to rescue. You have, you know, you sit there and you think, there's no way they can do this. Well, our country attempted this, and they got halfway in. Nobody in Iran knew that these individuals were on the desert ground. The two C-130s, they landed out of the 8 helicopters, and the mission details, it stated you need 6 helicopters. President Carter sent 8. 2 of them, once they took off, they hit a sandstorm. 2 of them had a backtrack. They had mechanical issues. The last CH-53 that landed had hydraulic problems, and it lit up like a Christmas tree. So it came down to 5 helicopters. We as the hostages, again, they'd always told us in our rooms, if the Americans try to come rescue you, we will kill you before they get to you. I mean, they told us this, Jason. I mean, and you're sitting there thinking, well, the United States isn't going to risk a war because of, what, 66 some people. I mean, you just thought you were going to rot there. Hmm. And that day, little did we realize that, you know, something was happening the morning of April 25th. We woke up and you could start hearing people running around. All of a sudden, as the day got longer, you could hear traffic in back of the embassy. The cars were driving erratically throughout the compound. People were running up and down the corridor of the hallway. And all of a sudden that night, they come running into the room. And whenever that door opened, you jump because, again, you didn't know if they were going to come in and start shooting or what. Mm. And they came in and they handcuffed all 3 of us together. And so handcuffed us together, blindfolded us, took us from the room downstairs up to the back into an embassy vehicle. Jerry was to my left. I was my left hand was handcuffed to his right hand. His left hand was now handcuffed to the vehicle. Billy's hand, my right hand, was handcuffed to his left hand. His right hand was handcuffed now to the vehicle. So here we are, 3 hostages in the back of a vehicle, handcuffed and now blindfolded. And they take a picture. I'll never forget that. Now, when they take that flash of picture, it's like, holy cow. And they put a blanket over top of us. Little did we realize, Jason, that the United States, during this attempted rescue operation, they needed 5 or 6 helicopters. They basically aborted the mission. And as they aborted the mission, it just so happened that one of the CH-53 helicopters had refinished fueling. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It was the first time that they had ever used night vision goggles in a rescue operation. This, I mean, that's how far back we were. And all of a sudden, the helicopter gets up, and the pilot, to my understanding, becomes vertigo. He doesn't know if he's up, down, sideways, what, clips the side of a wing of a CH-53, and it lands on the nose of the C-130, where some of the rescue guys, the Delta guys, were in. And so they don't know what the heck is going on. There's all of a sudden a crash and a fire. They get out, and they're trying to, like, understand what the heck is going on, who's attacking us, from what direction. And they get around the front of the airplane, and they see, and you're right, I mean, out of all the things that not only did we have to go through, but these guys that came over, they had the guts to try, Jason.
Yeah. How many Americans died?
8 individuals. And that's what I was going to say, is one of the guys ran around the front and he looked down underneath and he said, you know, Rocky, I'll never forget this, as I looked down underneath the helicopter and the flames were so hot. you could see an individual trying to crawl out from underneath it.
Oh, boy.
He was completely on fire. And he said, you know, there's nothing we could do. And so they had to abort and get out of there, because now the middle of the desert was lit up, you know, with a big fire. And so they had to get out. And not only did they lose 8 individuals, that they couldn't come in and rescue us. And so that evening of April 25th, they put us in vehicles. All the hostages on the morning of April 25th were all in one location. By that evening, the Islamic Republic of Iran moved us to different cities within Iran so that the United States never could find us. And so, but yeah, those 8 individuals, I can tell you, every morning I wake up, I think of those 8 individuals that gave their life for my life. Each day, I earn it in memory of what they tried to do, and that's to regain my freedom. And freedom is not free, Jason.
No, it's not. And that's, and as we wrap up, because Rocky has to get going, we're going to talk about a very special organization that he's working with now. Before we jump to that, just one quick editorial comment. You know, President Carter in 2015, he was asked about this tragic event. And without missing a beat, he said, "I wish I had just sent another helicopter."
There are 2 more helicopters.
2 more helicopters.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I am so proud that you remember that.
Yeah,
A wonderful man. And, you know, he will, you know, go down, obviously. The hostage terrorism, it started on his watch, but you know what? It's been every president since. The Islamic Republic of Iran, the mullahs are thugs, and the Revolutionary Guard are terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have never been held accountable, as you said it. And, you know, we were released January 20th, 1981. I can tell you a quick story there, Jason. They come into our room that night, and they blindfold us. And they put us and walk us outside. And I remember walking in something I hadn't felt for 2 years, snow. They had given us these open plastic toe shoes. I'm walking through snow. They put me on a vehicle. The vehicle drives off. 30 minutes later, we all of a sudden make a turn. You hear a sound of a jet engine. And this is something that you had prayed for, you had cried for, you had hoped for another opportunity. And all of a sudden, the vehicle stops and they tell us to unblindfold and you know, you take your blindfold slowly off, and here you are seeing people you hadn't seen for 444 days, and put us on an airplane. And they start closing the door, and I said, "Well, yeah, wait, where's Kurt? Where's Gene? Where's Judy? Where's Debbie? Where's everybody else?" And he said, "No, you're the last. The others were let go a year earlier." We had no idea that we were the last 52 people remaining out of all the hostages. And sure enough, I came home, and my girlfriend, which was my girlfriend prior, I thought she had left me, but she was there. She waited for me. And I find out about those 8 individuals and went to work for Anheuser-Busch. And that's where I met Lieutenant Colonel Rooney, the CEO of Folds of Honor. And it's a therapeutic piece for me, Jason. Every morning I wake up and I remember those 8, but working for Folds of Honor provides scholarships to children and spouses of our fallen, disabled military and now first responders. And first responders, just like what happened on 9/11, everybody was running away. And who was running into the building? Our first responders. They're heroes, just like our military. And so it's an honor for me to be able to give my effort each day in memory of those 8 individuals and their families.
Yeah, and we're going to provide links to folks for Folds of Honor, and we're going to strongly urge folks to donate, support them, pray for them especially. And you know, never forget, folks, that one of the worst things that happened to, at least in talking to hostages and former unlawfully detained persons over the years, is this fear of being forgotten. And they need to know that people are out there supporting them, and the spirit of those 8 men who gave it their all to go back in there and bring Americans home is the reason why there's a whole generation of people today working to help bring Americans home in places like Iran, still China, Cuba, you name it. There's Americans who've been held just because they have a blue passport, and because terrorist regimes and autocracies think they can leverage America and force us to do things that we shouldn't be doing. I mean, you know, it's Rocky, you know this. And as we wrap up, I just first of all want to thank you for your service. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for reliving this. You don't have to, but you do. You lean in. And that's what Americans do. We lean in and we do good. And you're doing a lot of good in the world right now. And you're helping a lot of people heal. A lot of people learn of the stories. And folks that I know who know your story have told me the great work you're doing. America has a long history with this issue, as you said. In fact, you can go back to the founding of the Republic. when our presidents had to deal with the pirates and the tributary corsairs and those states that our relationship with these that part of the world, North Africa, the Middle East, has always been somewhat complicated. And hopefully we will turn a leaf on that. And there's some laws in place now that we're trying to end hostage diplomacy. It's not going to be easy. A lot of it's going to require sacrifice of men like you who serve in these places, people at the State Department, who I don't think folks understand how difficult that job can be when you work in tough places, and the sacrifices that men and women in the military and the intelligence services do to make sure that we bring people home. And as we wrap this up, are there any parting words for that new generation who may be considering some type of government service or public service? What should they be doing? And should they be, you know, there's a lot of apathy out there about politics and government, but what words would you leave them with if they're considering some type of a career like the one you had, or people in the diplomatic service or the intel service?
Sure. If anything, 1% of our population serves the war on terrorism. And, you know, these are, like you said, there are jobs that need to be done. And but if anything, if these individuals, your listeners, do go, they must remember that they will never be forgotten. You know, because like you said, there are people like yourself and your wife that have served our country. So thank you. But just let them know that they will never be forgotten, and just continue to keep your mind, your heart, and your soul, you know, together, and don't let them break you, because it was so close. I mean, three of my fellow colleagues tried to commit suicide over there, and they succeeded when they came home. It was a very difficult, it continues. But as you said, Jason, for me, by me telling the story, I'm giving back to those 8 individuals. And it's the generations that we have to continue this to keep America great, because here at Folds of Honor, we talk about honor their sacrifice, educate the legacy. Can't bring somebody home, but we can at least help provide an education for those families that have never and will never be forgotten. So I salute you again and your wife for all that you have done.
Well, thank you, Rocky Sickman, for being with us today. Marine Sergeant Rocky Sickman, one of the original Americans held hostage in Iran for 444 days. Thank you.